This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Okay, my name is Roy Bayfield and I'm leading this session, which has got the intriguing title, Digital Marketing, Keeping It Ahead of the Rest. And I spent hours wondering about what it might actually be in this context. I will talk for at least a quarter of an hour. The idea is this session is sort of interactive and it's a discussion, so there'll be plenty of time for us to explore the issues ourselves. But just so you're not completely cheated, I will give you some input to start with. I'm quite a chaotic speaker. When the caffeine kicks in, I can go radically off topic. What can you do? That's the way it's going to be. So, digital marketing. Before that then, I'll explain a bit about who I am and what Edge Hill University is so you know who it is that's in front of you. Edge Hill is a campus-based university in the northwest of England, near Liverpool. We are quite new as a university, and recruiting students is an important part of our business. So we have invested a lot of effort in marketing to establish ourselves, and we trebled our applications over a five-year period, and have got to the point where we've now got basically this year we had full recruitment for the first time. Marketing is something we do. We don't have issues about getting marketing thought about at the top table and that kind of thing. In terms of digital, we seem to have acquired a reputation in this area. We've certainly done some things, and I would suggest, which I'll be talking to you a bit about. And it's clearly a key aspect of what we do. So hopefully I'll have something to say. I've worked in higher education marketing for 20 years. So I did start in the sort of pre-computer era when it was just abacuses and things. Obviously I've always been interested in digital marketing, perhaps to an unseemly level for a person of my advanced years. So in my various jobs. Actually, Rosemary retrospectively promoted me. I was never director of marketing at Wolverhampton University. If that's it, they might have wanted somebody else who did have that title. That, I think, is who I am and why I'm here. What I was going to say to start with was that we're already beyond digital. Okay, this is something I read an article by Nicholas Negroponte, internet theorist, a number of years ago, saying that digital is already dead. What he meant was we don't think about the digitalness of the technology. Computers, they've disappeared into other devices, I've come equipped with iPhones and all sorts of things. So just as when you're getting into your car, you're probably not giving a great deal of thought to the internal combustion process, people are seamlessly using IT in all sorts of ways. So digital is just part of the landscape. Just as I wrote this yesterday, my computer at work actually stopped working. So I was sort of catapulted from this marvellous world of theory where, yes, obviously that's right, digital, it's not something you have to think about, to thinking, God damn technology, why doesn't it work? But by and large, I would argue, digital communications and experiences aren't a fully separate part of people's lives. In general, in the Western world, in the age bands we're largely talking about. Digital things aren't separate. That's where we will do our shopping or book train tickets or talk to people or whatever. And therefore, digital marketing isn't or shouldn't be a separate silo of marketing activity. Okay, it would be kind of crazy to say, phew, we've got marketing covered, now let's get some people to do the digital marketing. Or say, that's all the web team's job to sort out. You know, it needs to be integrated. If keeping ahead, coming back to the title of the session, keeping ahead therefore involves focusing on the digital dimension of all of our marketing work. So that's my basic approach. I'm not going to sort of unleash a new technology thing on you and say, well, if we want to keep ahead of the rest, we should have one of these. I'm going to talk a bit about the ways that digital approaches can pervade our marketing. And it is designed to be conversation starters more than sort of super examples of best practice. And thinking this through, it seems to me that there's three broad areas that we need to think about. There's some people stuff, there's some brand stuff, and there's some marketing stuff. That's what I've... That's how I've sort of structured my little bits of things I'm going to say. And most of you would have handouts with these notes on. If you haven't got one, through the marvels of digital technology, they will be on the website from, I believe, noon tomorrow. So what's it all about? Well, the people stuff, I think, what's really important for keeping it ahead of the rest is lots of old-fashioned things, one of which is having quality conversations. So, you know, I think it's not so much that this never happened before, but digital marketing channels give us new ways to have quality conversations. So I'm talking really about conversations between the university, whether it's the university staff, university students, conversation between the university and, say, potential students. If that's your marketing objective, take a fairly simple marketing objective. We need to be talking to students, and this is one way it can happen, using their channels of choice. So there will be people who like to use particular online things. When we launched our website for applicants, which I'll be showing you later, there's various things there. There's traditional web pages. There is a frequently asked questions section. There's a tool to ask a question of our admissions people. And there's a forum where you can enrol, you can chat, you know, you could talk about whatever you wanted. People's favourite route for asking questions is to put them on the forum where they get answered by students or sometimes by staff. So the idle Generation Y people, they could find these answers by looking through the web pages. You know, it's there for them to find out, but they want the instant kind of hit of asking the question and getting a response. They could do it in various ways, but they like to do it on the forum. So we facilitate the forum and they can ask questions there, and that's all fine. Other people will have other channels. We talked about Twitter. Perhaps not a major thing for potential undergrads, but there are people who like that, and that's a good way for them to be getting information. So I'm suggesting that quality conversations is an important thing. It's often been said that, you know, the kind of is it our space or their space thing, you know, the should we jump in and be in Facebook or on Bebo and be participating in these conversations. The example as I've heard is, you know, if you heard two people having a conversation on a bus, would you go over and interrupt and say, but what about this mobile phone? It's really great. Obviously, you wouldn't. That'd be really crass and awful. On the other hand, if two people on a bus were talking about your university and saying, I really want to know if they do business courses, but I just can't find out the answer, you know, would you think, well, I'm not going to interrupt and tell them? Or, you know, if you're at an open day and people are obviously lost, would you walk away or would you help them find their way? So I think there are appropriate interventions it's possible to have. And it's not about stealth marketers or anything like that. It's about, you know, real people having conversations with real people. Right, enough about that. So So far, I've really talked about the university talking to these outsiders, the markets, but it's also digital is about helping people communicate with each other. Now, that's something that happens. You know, we've talked about the interesting phenomena that every sort of customer interaction is there on the web for people to find. And people are talking about your university and therefore creating your brand in all sorts of ways, on Facebook, in forums, etc. I mean, one thing our university does is train teachers. Training teachers involves interviews. And you can read people talking about the interview they're about to go to, talking as soon as it's finished about what happened in the interview, what they were asked, what it was like. I've yet to see anybody actually doing an online thing during the interview, but it would technically be possible. So there's that kind of live thing. And, you know, it's happening anyway. We could decide just let it happen, as we said, make sure the reality is so great that by and large what people are saying is going to be good. We can intervene when we feel we really need to. You know, I mean, we have had a couple of things taken down when they've become libelous or completely ridiculous. We have sometimes nudged some students and said, well, look at this on what uni or whatever. You know, wouldn't it be great if you just went online and gave your warts and all points of view? So sometimes we've kind of helped to manage the process of those positive comments appearing as rejoinders. But you might want to go a step further and create specific opportunities for this kind of customer-to-customer communication. We did that with applicants, and I'll show you that a bit later. Another people thing is I've put inspiring and influencing other people's communication. And what I'm getting at here is, age test. Anyone remember John Peel, DJ? Okay, about half of us, a UK DJ. He once said that he hoped that one day every person would have their own radio station, so we'd all of us be empowered to broadcast our own stuff we liked. And, you know, in effect, that's happened, literally. You know, you could create playlists and share them. Also, of course, everyone can share their opinions, their views, their, you know, photos they've taken, any media, you know, everyone, you know, again, with the qualification, I'm talking affluent West and all that kind of thing. But people can do this, you know, your own staff can do it. And if you look at the extremes, you know, the disgruntled person you've just sacked, obviously that can be quite alarming. But if you look at the majority, you've got people who engage with their subject, people engage with the student experience, people just living their lives. So they're all the communicators, and in effect, the you know, like obviously I'm old school. I've been doing this stuff for a long time. You know, I think the first conference I ever came to like this, we were thinking about staff newsletters. Should the staff newsletter be more like Private Eye or more like Pravda? Well, Pravda, there's another age test. But you know, should it be really centrally controlled, or should it be kind of more open to what it can communicate? Now, there, it was like, well, we control the communication tools. We're making these decisions about what they're like. Now it's been kind of democratized and decentralized. Now, again, that's just a thing that's happening in the world. But as marketers, we might want to be at least equipping people with the kind of tools we'd like them to have as ambassadors. You know, so if I've got, you know, my student bloggers, they're doing some great things. It doesn't do any harm to give them some video stuff, you know, maybe some professional videos they can share, maybe being creating interesting events for them to be talking about, stuff like that. So I do believe there's ways that we can, you know, accept and embrace the fact that communication is now so so widespread, but also think of ways to influence that from a marketing perspective. I did say I'm prone to going off topic. I'm kind of disturbed by how much this looks like an electric razor. I keep thinking they've given me this, so I'll have a shave. which, you know, perhaps we should have a poll, you know, should I shave, shouldn't I? I think also as marketers, we have to think about audiences. The world isn't a monolithic place. People's online behaviour is different in different countries. We do have mature students, we do have employed students, and you know, we do have people who work in particular professional settings that have particular kinds of constraints on them. You know, we train thousands of nurses. They're time poor. You know, they spend a lot of time in wards and hospitals and stuff like that. So, you know, the ways we communicate with them, for instance, to promote professional development courses, aren't going to be the same as what we would use for, say, sixth formers, who are a bit of a captive audience. So we need to be thinking about how we make things work for whichever audiences are important to us. Yeah. Playing, playfulness. This is risky, but we're in a world where all of the interesting technological developments, or the most interesting technological developments, are created in a kind of collaborative Web 2 kind of way. So it's important, I think, to have somebody in your university who is playing, who is experimenting, who's networking with other people who are, you know, developing cool new stuff, as I've put here. Clearly, that playfulness needs to be within some boundaries, but that's the way we've done things. You know, we work... I don't actually manage our web people, but I have a great relationship with them. You know, on paper, I'd do joint appraisals or something, but we don't really bother with that. You know, basically, I know that the stuff they're doing in kind of sort of researching new toys is going to be useful, and that when we have a task, when we think, well, okay, how do you think we could tackle this? You know, how do you think we could tackle our crisis communications or our, you know, reaching a particular audience? They'll have a toolkit to suggest, and that they're developing the basic infrastructure of our online offer in a way that facilitates us doing the kinds of things we need to do. So the playful research development aspect, I think that's really important. Thinking about that a bit more seriously, training, developing, leading, managing staff. You know, if you have teams of people, you might want them to be engaged with online marketing. Might be very different from the kind of skill set they've grown up with. You know, I've got people who are very print orientated, which is right. I mean, I think print is still important to us. We still have a demand for, you know, for gorgeous printed design material. And I can't just get those people overnight to become web designers. It's just different. But more than that, I think, in the sort of social networking environment, who, you know, how do we get people to have the will and the ability to engage online in the ways that the channels we now have, and also, crucially, the kind of professional knowledge to make the kind of judgments that you need to make about what you share and what you put online. That's a tricky one, because part of the culture of the audience and part of the expectation, I think, that's coming from you know, from Generation Y, is one of great openness and sharing. And people will happily put stuff on their Facebook status or whatever that you know, might seem quite odd to have shared that with the public world. Now, clearly, we can't do that as universities in quite the same way, but you know, it's interesting stuff negotiating these different cultures, I suppose. I'd add as a sub thing to that. This might involve getting your hands dirty. I think if you're in charge of it, if you're working with digital marketing, if you're looking at how social networks might work for your university, it's useful to have at least some hands-on experience of what that actually means and how these things work. You know, even if it's only on a temporary basis, I think it's important to get into that and to be able to feel what it's like from the inside. So those are a few things that I thought about relating to people. I've also thought about some stuff relating to brand. And I think the challenges for managing brands have evolved. You know, in digital gives new opportunities, new aspects to things. Particularly, where does the brand live? If everybody can communicate to, almost to the same level as the corporate part of the university, if the customers themselves can communicate, then where is your brand? I think that higher education, it's diverse. Universities are very multifaceted. They do very different things. And I think that's what's great about them. It's fantastic that an art school isn't the same as a law school, for instance. And clearly they have different personalities, different cultures, probably different priorities. And I think the online world is very good at mediating that diversity. Everything can be there and things can link to other things, and that's all fine. If we're marketers and we're thinking perhaps of, well, what's the core brand of our institution, however, then we need to think, well, how do we actually make that visible? So if yours is a research-intensive university, what share of voice does research have in the digital outpourings of that institution? Perhaps you're a research-based university. I follow you on Twitter. Will I see, for instance, links to news stories about research, podcasts about research, or will I see random chatter that's more about the student experience? There's a place for both. And it's probably right that they all happen because, even the most full-on research place will have its student experience that it needs to promote. But if we're thinking about brand, how do we give that kind of salience to what's important to us? No quick answer to that, but I suppose it's partly about having the sort of people and the systems to put those messages out there. I think there's new challenges for managing our image as well. There's a lot of demand for very authentic, instant, quick turnaround, real content coming from users. Let's hear from the real students, see what real students put in their blogs. Let's see videos on YouTube and stuff that's like what it's really like. And I think all of that's great, but you probably wouldn't want that to be all that anybody ever sees, So I think most of us will still be producing, what you might call professionally produced, well-managed and carefully crafted communications about our institutions. And I think, obviously there's a place for both. It's interesting to think, well, what might be the dissonance between them? We're a campus university, as I said. We're in our current campaigns, it's very much about pushing the campus out there, getting people to see the campus, and obviously we want to make it look great. Now, clearly, if you saw that and then you saw lots of YouTube stuff that made it look rubbish, there'd be a big gap. Now, I don't think that would be the case, but it's something to think about. What's the image you're trying to portray? How are you portraying it professionally? And and what's the link between the two? Like I say, I think there's a place for both. There's a place for high-end, professional, as it were, glossy stuff. There's a place for the informal, instant, very authentic stuff. I think it's things that hover in the middle that aren't right. Now, if it looks like we've tried to make a professional video and the students did it and there's some bins in the background, it actually looks crap. But you can't quite... But it's obviously like semi-official, it's got credits and stuff. Then I think that's where it all kind of falls down, really. Or, obviously, if we professionally make a YouTube-style video, which is not authentic and that's obviously been directed, that would be a bit rubbish as well. I think there's an opportunity to create constant streams of content. We're talking about engaging people. in a mass, engaging large numbers of people and creating lots of little hooks for them that might hook them in. So it's not about let's reinvent our website and make it fantastic and review it in a year. What's coming out every day that's keeping people interested? And, you know, digital now means we've got loads of channels to do that. It's worth creating stuff every day. It's worth me saying to my new press officers and marketing officers, you know, you need to be creating a little bit of stuff, frequently, rather than getting tied up in huge projects where nothing happens for 3 months. You know, we want to see this constant life. You know, universities are the most fascinating organisations on earth, so they should be fascinating, just as the BBC is fascinating, throwing out content all the time. A practical point about making your key messages shareable. So if I like your information about your course, your news story, a photo, how easy is it for me, as the person looking at it, to put it on Facebook, share on Twitter, embed it in a blog or whatever? Easy stuff to do, but I think it does pay dividends because then things can move around. And also there's a kind of internal aspect as well. You know, I don't want to sort of have to like create 12 different department websites. I want to create really good content about a range of subjects and themes that are relevant to us, but I want that to be popping up wherever it's relevant, you know? So there's a kind of opportunity to make sure that everything can be seen everywhere it needs to be seen. Marketing stuff, my third group. Integrating online and offline marketing communications. I won't say a great deal about this. You know, it's kind of obvious. I don't think many of us are going to leap directly to the Cal Poly approach of print free in a short space of time. I think there are things that mediate against that, you know, the different missions we all have, the expectations created by a nationally managed application cycle, etc., etc. But these things do need to work together, and we need to think about what their roles actually are. You know, where's which tools are you using to create awareness? Which tools are you using to give information? Which tools are you using to build people's interest? And make sure you're not confusing the two. You know, the days when we would just give everybody a prospectus, as if having the prospectus was like a kind of a sort of magic bullet that once they've got it, it will, you know, it will kind of colonise their mind and give them everything you want them to have. You know, that's all gone, really. We can be a bit more nuanced, I think. We need to look at communicating through the recruitment cycle, giving the right messages at the right time, which can mean making sure that the person can get those messages when they want them, you know, rather than us thinking, well, you know, it's the autumn, they're thinking about their choices, and then after Christmas, they'll be thinking about a decision. But somebody, they've already made a firm decision, and they in their minds, want to go straight to the end of the process and find out, well, all right, you know, how do I get the key to the door on the campus, and do I have to bring a saucepan kind of stuff? So I think it's the communications we put out, we need to manage those in a timely fashion, but also enable people to get what they want when they need it. Also, all the time, I think this is about building trust and engagement. You know, people are going to commit their lives to us, and you know, their online interactions with us are a good way of building up that trust, I think. And we all the time want to know more. We want to harvest data. We want to work with it. We want to, you know, find out who are the best students. You know, this basically is the argument for CRM, which is, I think, well understood. But rather than put up a slide that says why we need CRM, I'm not clever enough to do that. I've kind of thought, well, why do we need these things? And another thing coming out of the digital world, ways to be efficient, given that we're all under budget constraints. Using new ways of communication can mean less print, less post. I mean, you could hardly have less post than at the moment, but, you know, less cost for that, less reliance on telephones. I'm making an argument for not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I still think there's a place for quality print, probably less of it. Some people really want real-time spoken communication with people, so phone calls, etc. You know, the human element, I think, can't be overemphasised. For me, however digital we get, it's about, coming back to my first point, really, it's about real people talking to real people, so I want those real people to be there and to be skilled and to be knowledgeable. Okay. Digital marketing, monitoring and maximising online impacts is obviously an issue. I think we need new kinds of agility. We need to be able to see what's happening in terms of, you know, in as close to real time as possible in terms of what people are interested in, how they're interacting with us, through which channels, and make changes appropriately. And that can be in very short cycles. You know, our marketing process really is reviewed every week in terms of where we spend our money, where we put our resource. And we now have new ways to do old school marketing communications, okay? So if we're thinking in terms of a simple kind of AIDA type model, new ways to create awareness, you know, well, obviously there's search marketing, actual advertising on the web might have a place. There's ways we manage our internet presence. That increasingly includes the mobile environment. Okay, now there's lots of interesting stats. You know, smartphones are the only kind of phones being made now, I believe. So pretty soon, smartphones will penetrate further down into, you know, become almost universal. So there are opportunities for being in that environment. I put a question mark on the handout because I'm not sure any of us have. I could be wrong, obviously, that's because somebody else should be giving the talk, but I'm not sure any of us have found like the best way to do that. I think using mobile, we need to think about what actual benefits we deliver, what are people actually going to want to have. You know, one university has created a prospectus you can have on your iPhone, but to me, do you want that as something you're going to refer to frequently enough to actually have it around on your phone? To me, it feels like maybe the wrong thing to focus on. I've also put the gaming environment with two question marks because I'm even less convinced that any of us have figured out a way to do that. But again, how do people spend their time online? You know, games are a big part of it, virtual worlds, role-playing, etc. You know, just as we might... You know, a legitimate choice for an education marketer could be to put up posters in a football ground, possibly. Would we, you know, look at doing the equivalent in a game of some description? There's also the world of online PR and a role for online ambassadors who, in a skillful way, are out there where the communication is happening and are interacting. Okay, we've also got new ways of fulfilling information needs, such as the kind of things CRM systems deliver, bespoke web pages for individuals, further opportunities to communicate with the university through chat, forums, etc. And also building interest, that relationship building aspect, encouraging people to stay connected, interact through various ways. You know, and I would argue that does have to be on the platforms where people actually choose to be, but also in your own website. And part of this is about providing that compelling media-rich content, managing the student-created content, and maybe creating interesting applications for people to have. So there's lots of stuff we could and should be doing in terms of keeping relationships rich and interesting. Again, I've touched on how, you know, obviously we have information we can harvest from people's interactions with us online. Final thing is delivering real benefits. It's tempting to think of all of this as just new ways to do marketing communications. But really, if we're marketers and we're going back to first principles, what's the benefits we're delivering to our customers? Are we, through our how we evolve our digital offer, making things easier for them, making things quicker for them, making things more fun? You know, I should imagine if we asked people, well, what would you prefer? You know, read a blog by the head of admissions or be able to book online on an open day and have your car parking party? You know, they'd probably go for the functionality, really. So I think there's things in our, probably the areas that we control in the recruitment process where we can be delivering some real benefits, tangible benefits to people. The wider university also has opportunities to deliver some of those real benefits, and that could be about enrolment, the ways that people access services like accommodation, car parking, that kind of thing, the ways that we communicate about things like changes in classes, all that kind of stuff, mobile applications that probably will be useful to people. So I think there's a conversation there as well about how, you know, digital, not just digital marketing communications, but digital marketing in the full sense can actually work. Right. So you might be thinking, well, you talk a good game, but what do you guys actually do? Well, we do many things. We're on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Twitter. That isn't Twitter. That's we do some Google advertising as well. This kind of the ones that pop up at the side based on the search terms you put in. That actually is actually, although none of these are our own actual adverts, but this for us has become one of our largest advertising spends because it's delivering the best results. Alongside that, we've got advertising on UCAS pages, but we also do television as well, which obviously has nothing to do with digital at all, really. But for us, it's a blend that works at the moment. Where's my Twitter picture? Okay, I'll talk a bit about Twitter because it came up. Its marketing role might be still remain to be found. I think in PR, then that is really interesting. And I'll tell you a positive story and a negative story relating to Twitter and PR, but also, I suppose, about brand awareness for our university as well, in case you're thinking, PR? How dare he mention that? We're marketers. Right, a good thing. Last weekend, my university was mentioned relating to a story that was a business commentary on a technology issue, I suppose you could say that. It was mentioned in national press in the UK, mentioned in some significant press in other parts of the world, for instance, you know, when the ABC News, Sydney Morning Herald, etc. We're on national and regional TV, national and regional radio, all in the space of a couple of days, and literally thousands of online mentions, facilitated largely by Twitter. So how it came about, basically a couple of blog posts that we did almost a year ago came to the attention of The Telegraph, okay, which is a national UK sort of quality newspaper. The story is, it's a tiny thing, you know, our head of web services had noticed that the town he was born in on Google Maps had been renamed. So it's like Google had kind of got it wrong, given his town a new name. And it's, you know, there's a bit of an issue there. We all rely on Google, you know, their databases and so on. I extrapolated that, actually nothing to do with work, but in my real life, I'm doing a project that involves walking from the northwest of England where I live back to Brighton where I've come from, and I'm writing a blog about that. So I involved this thing about this phantom town that had been renamed and recreated into that walk and wrote a fanciful, surreal post about that. And those things have just sat there on the internet quietly for a year. Telegraph woman found my thing, thought it was interesting, did a story about it in the paper with a quote from me, mentions Edgehill University. That then catapulted it into sort of international attention because people, for some reason, well, this story caught people's imaginations, A, because of the serious aspect of, well, why do Google get things wrong, you know, what about our sat-navs, etc., B, because of the fanciful dimension, which is where I came in, of, you know, like the idea of imaginary cities and, you know, maybe it's a gateway to an alternate universe or whatever. So the combination of the two made a nice little story that went everywhere. Twitter was a big part of promulgating that because literally thousands, I mentioned, you know, making content shareable, literally thousands of tweets occurred linking to either the Telegraph story or other ones that had had spun off from it. And we also had some celebrity tweeters tweeting it as well, and then that started the whole thing off again. So that's kind of a good thing, because it's like little input, big output, lots of nice mentions for Edgehill. Obviously, it'd be nice if it was something more serious, but, you know, that's how the effect can happen, I think. A negative example, we run a... it's a long 15-minute input, isn't it? we run a literary prize. We give a prize for a collection of short stories by a single author. So kind of a Booker Prize kind of deal. We have the ceremony, the authors come, the winner is announced, and we want the authors to be there, so they find out on the night, you've won the big prize, you've won the Reader's Prize, you others haven't won anything at all, sorry. So kind of like, you know, build up the excitement and so on. but obviously we know who's won, and because we want it in the press, we issue an embargoed press release that says who's won. Now, so far so good, but this happens on a Saturday night as well. One of the media that the press release had gone to was actually a web-based, didn't do the embargo thing properly, so it appeared on their website very briefly, a couple of hours, because we spotted it and got them to take it down. But Twitter means it went everywhere, means it reached all the loser authors, so we only had one writer at the award. And we probably had, well, you know, so that's kind of a bad thing. So Twitter killed our story, created our other story about the non-existent town, but killed our story about who's won the big prize. So the instantness is very interesting, you know, and how quickly can you jump on things? Not quickly enough, really. I mean, you think, you know, it was on a website for a couple of hours, who cares? But that's enough time for it to virally go everywhere. Now, neither of those things are of huge moment, but obviously they're there. it would work in the same way if we did something fantastically good or with a real disaster story. So the kind of agility we've got to have to be able to intervene is significant, really. Other stuff we've done, you know, we've rejigged our website, which I haven't got a slide of, but you know, we've made sure that our website can take any media that's thrown at it. So all of the key corporate pages, they can have video, they can have chat boxes, they can have photo galleries, they can have traditional content without it being too much of a big deal. Everything is shareable, so you can take that element and put it somewhere else. Everything's tagged, so you can have feeds. You know, if for some reason you wanted to subscribe to our you know, prospectus entry for history, you could do that. I mentioned a website for applicants. This is something we've done. The forum aspect for this is very lively, very useful to people. You can actually see people forming relationships before they arrive at the university. And also that's, I haven't got time now, really, but it's had an interesting role in some of the negative stuff as well. So, you know, when there's been things that people haven't liked, it's actually been a good thing that's been talked about on this forum. Anyone can see it, but to post you have to be an actual applicant, and we send people passwords to be able to do that. Now, you might think, but there's millions of forums. You know, surely people would rather go to the student room or Facebook pages or whatever. And they probably do, and they will do all those things as well. But I suppose what you wouldn't know out there in the wild is who exactly is coming to Edge Hill next year. So creating an official space that still uses that sort of approach gives people somewhere to be when they can, you know, perhaps be a tad more serious as well than they would be on say, Facebook. So that's an interesting aspect. We're now looking at how do we broaden this out to all potential students. You know, what's a version of this that's going to be relevant for people who are a bit further upstream, as it were, who are a bit more distant from enrolling at the university. We have student blogs, which are facilitated. We reward these people for doing them. There will probably be other blogs that are nothing to do with us, but we do have, like, the official guys. And I think part of our role now is pushing those towards that kind of online ambassador role as well, which some of them, you know, they have the skills, they have the fluency in that world to be able to do that. Talked about hiring people with the right skills. Talked a bit about creating internet-friendly news, although, you know, we'd like to do that a bit more deliberately now. My mission for this year is to enhance our CRM systems, but I'm also committed to keeping what I'm calling old-school people skills, because, like I say, if there's one idea I've got, it's real people talking to real people. I think that's all I've got. I thought of some questions on the basis that I'd talk for 10 minutes and then it'd all be questions, but it hasn't quite worked out that way. So I think I'll just say, questions, have you got any? Ah, Catherine, surprise.
I think what you're doing looks really forward-thinking. Sorry. Catherine Jones, Birmingham City University. Who actually monitors all the content on Facebook, Twitter, and who kind of, you know, create the posts? Do you have dedicated people? Is it part of other people's jobs?
Right. It's been built up by enthusiasts, and basically myself, head of web services, happen to be into this kind of stuff. And, you know, I could be at home, you know, 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. I might be watching, you know, I'll be multitasking in my pretend to be a teenager mode. And, you know, I could spot something on that forum and go to look at it, and Mike's already been there and done it from some bar in Liverpool. So we've had this sort of enthusiast phase, but that's obviously unsustainable because, A, we're not the right people to be doing it, really, and, B, you know, there's going to be too much of it and we have got other things to do. So that's why we're looking at inserting it into people's roles. You know, I haven't tried to revolutionise. You know, we haven't sort of made all the old marketing people redundant and hired in shiny new ones with their kind of, you know, gleaming robot heads. But we've tried to take people with us. You know, so I've got a colleague who at first was like, I don't get any of this. But now, you know, she says, well, I can see how it works with, you know, with Liverpool Football Club. I can see how, yeah, you can get match reports and how you get this and that. So, she, you know, people do kind of get it in the end. But it's just that moment when, whereas even as recently as last year, it felt like I needed somebody to manage advertising. Now I'm thinking, well, we don't actually do much advertising, you know, and when we do, it's not very effective. So let's shift that resource. At least I've still got that resource. So let's shift that and adapt that to more digital stuff. So I need someone who can look at Google stats every day. And, or that I can go to and say, well, how do we get more, let's get more awareness for this, and we'll actually do something without it being a big deal.
Thank you. Angela O'Neill, College of Europe in Belgium. I'm inundated daily by people phoning me up asking if I want to buy web advertising. Do you have any tips on how to look into effective web advertising, and what are the pitfalls?
Right, I mean, it could be that there isn't any. I suppose, I think for me, I'd look for some kind of targetability. You know, I would need to see that it's getting in front of the right people, however those might be defined. If it was a particular professional group and this was where they went to get their professional stuff, that could be great. If there's a meaningful way of segmenting and targeting the users, that could be good as well. You know, I mean, I'd rather that it was just a complete no-no and obviously a complete waste of time, but it actually isn't. And clearly, sometimes we do need to be finding ways to intrusively put things in front of people, whether they want to see them or not. So I do think it has a role, but the providers have got to prove by something other than just quoting some huge numbers that they've got a way to get your content in front of people. Anyone else got any thoughts on that? You know, internet advertising, ways to work out if it's worthwhile or not?
Charlotte Rennett, University of Bradford. I've come from a digital agency, and I would, from my experiences, I would really sing the praises of pay-per-click because it's fairly cheap. You can geo-target it down to specific cities. You can target demographics. You can change it on a weekly basis, so you should get feedback every single week about how it's performing. So you get a massive information from it. You can be really, really targeted, and you can change it really, really quickly as well. I'm not working at an agency anymore, but I still like pay-per-click.
Hi, Shiveel, University of Chester. Just on a sort of side point of that, because obviously we've used in the past things like pay-per-click, but also gone with other agencies that are selling advertising space in things like Student Room and Bebo and stuff. And the aspect of people saying, well, you know, you've had 100,000 clicks or whatever is great is one thing, but you need to follow that up when you get to the actual open day, because if two people turn up to the open day said that they found you on the Student Room, you know, was that really worth £2,000 of your spend? So, you know, just make sure as well that you're following it right through the process from, you know, the click through to the actual to the day.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and also monitoring what happens on your own website as well, in terms of having some sort of analytics that will say, okay, the person came from that click, how long did they stay, what did they look at? And you can tell a lot from that, you know, if people just bounce away immediately, you know, as opposed to the people who, you know, perhaps they fulfill some kind of action, they fill in a form or they request information or whatever. So there are ways, but it needs putting together, you know, which again, eventually this will just become natural day-to-day business, I suppose. At the moment, it feels like something you've got to deliberately manage to put in place to have that analytics. We're into the last 5 minutes, moving up to lunch. So any more questions? Yep.
Thank you. Dawn Ellis from the University of Edinburgh. I'm interested in your digital priorities for next year and the next few years. Where do you see your resource being put?
Okay, well, I think for us in the next year, it will be to do with CRM, because I think we, like everybody, we do CRM in some way, but I think for us, we haven't got the efficiency gains and the functionality from today's great CRM systems, you know, so to the point where we actually feel we've moved backwards. So we need to be having that, and I've restructured my team to be able to deliver that, and now we're looking at the system we need to put in place. Next few years, I think that will be, for me, I'd see that as enriching the experience that people can get before they've arrived at the university. You know, I think we can assume that speeds will get faster, that media richness will expand, will increase, and that you know, people could almost have quite an immersive experience with you, and more of that direct contact with people, and finding ways to manage that actually do deliver us some advantage, is what I'll be looking at really.
Can I just ask one more? Is that working? Yeah. how much of that resource will you put onto working your marketing people working with the academics? Because there's a lot of academic blogging, researcher blogging going on, and it was mentioned earlier that you know that is a very interesting route to policy and influencing. I wonder if your marketing team is working more closely with your academics.
Well, I think what we need to be doing there, what we've started doing, is facilitating them having these platforms and channels to communicate. And, you know, not everybody can write a regular blog. So we need to find, well, what do you do for the person that's got one really interesting thing to say a year? You know, we've got to find a place. It's not a press story. It's not a prospectus page. It's not a blog that's going to be there forever. But it's like this one fascinating thing. So how do we create that and, you know, make it easy for them to get it where it needs to be? I think it's our job to take that bit of content and make sure we communicate it outwards, we share it and we, you know, enable people, other people to share it. So, yeah, I think that relationship needs to be, you know, extended, if you like. Some of it's about facilitating people to do stuff. Other people, it is still about getting things from them and making the most of it. Catherine. So it's Catherine stopping us going to lunch now.
Just following on from that, because it's something that I've been kind of debating at the moment. If you're encouraging kind of individual staff and academics to have their own pages, blogs, do you put any disclaimers or do you have any protocols or do you just literally let them get on with it?
Writing a policy on that at the moment. Yes, there are disclaimers. Sorts of stuff we've had to think about. Offensive material. You know, we have a professor of poetics whose poetry will be full of words that you you wouldn't normally put into the public domain. And, you know, we need to think about that. Well, is our website technically an adult environment? You know, this is where our skill in making stuff on the web appear on plasma screens all around the campus began to get us in trouble because people had brought their kids in for swimming at the weekend. You know, they didn't want that in their eyes. But, you know, so there's things we never thought we'd ever have to deal with. Technically, it will be their line manager's responsibility, who obviously won't do much about that, but there will be an ultimate line of accountability, really. And somebody would have to agree that this person is empowered, you know. But given that academics are basically paid to find things out and then tell people about them, you know, it's hard to see that we'd want to restrict that, really. But, yeah, it's an interesting challenge. And if people were finding things inappropriate or wrong. I mean, where it would get really interesting is if somebody's genuine evidence-based academic opinion was somehow at odds with the direction the university was going in. Haven't encountered that yet, but I'd look forward to that as another thing to do next year. I think we're going to need to wrap up. I know nothing. Oh, no, I do know about the food. Everything's here, so we don't need to go down to the restaurant. Basically, there'll be buffets outside. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. No, sorry. Special guest announcement.
Hello, my name's Rosie Murdy. I'm from Kingston University, and I'm currently doing an MSc in marketing. And my dissertation is actually focusing on Twitter and its use by universities at the moment. So what I'm looking for is anyone who'd be willing to take part in some research. What would it basically involve is just probably a half-hour interview, either in person or on the phone, just talking about the way that your university is actually using Twitter, what you think about it as a medium. I'm also monitoring kind of Twitter posts by universities at the moment. I'm hoping then to write this up into a research, and obviously anyone who takes part, I'll be willing to share that with you and hopefully identify some best practice. So if anyone is interested and would be able to help, if you could just give me your details over lunch, I'd be very grateful. Thank you. Thank you, Roy.